prize presentations. And I took the train to Hiroshima one day on the bullet train, and on the way back, I knew nothing about the Japanese rail system. And I found the platform. My train was at 4:03 to go back to Kyoto. And I got there at 3:58, and there was a train there. So I got on and thought, okay, I'm going to Kyoto. It was going to Osaka. And when I came back to the hotel, I said to somebody, I just thought the train was early. And they started laughing, and they said, this is Japan. The train is never that early. And they did a study. The rail system in Japan is very well developed. Over the course of a year, it was 38 seconds out from... No. The short answer is no. So that's what we're aiming for today, to be 38 seconds out for the speakers. Deanne Brandstetter is going to now talk about the challenges facing business in delivering a nutritious and affordable food. She is the Vice President of Nutrition and Wellness with the Compass North Group in North America. So, Deanne Brandstetter.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. And you would think that Hal and David and I had coordinated things, even though we really hadn't. I'm going to build a little bit more on the idea of value chains and the different levers along the value chain, but more from the perspective of the food service industry versus the retail industry. And the food service industry is unique in that we're the ones who are in the front lines actually putting the food on the table in front of people, actually providing the meals every day. But I'd like to begin by telling you a little bit about Compass Group, because it's not a household name the way Campbell's or Unilever or Costco or some of the other companies that you've heard of today. We're actually a UK-based company with a fairly large division here in the U.S. And you can see exactly the impact that we have on food and nutrition by the number of meals that we serve and the number of locations that we operate in every day. We're actually providing 2.5 billion meals a year, which is a huge, huge number of meals. We also like to say that we feed people from the cradle to the grave. Meaning we feed children in daycare, we feed kids in schools, colleges and universities, we feed folks in the corporate worksite setting, corporate cafeterias, we feed them in hospitals and nursing homes, and if they happen to slip up in life, we will also feed them in prison. So huge diversity, different value chains along that way. We also operate in over 65 different countries. So in that respect, we operate to a large extent in developed countries, but also in the developing countries. And the value chains are very different depending on where you are. The different levers are different depending on where you are. Probably the best example I can give you in the developing countries, a lot of our role is just in facilitating a clean and safe water supply, refrigeration so that we can serve food that isn't spoiled, as opposed to the developed world where those sorts of things are a given. So the characteristics of the food service business model, because this really influences how much we as an industry or as a business are able to contribute. We typically don't have big foundations like the Gates Foundation or General Mills that has a foundation. Because we operate in an environment of very slim profit margins, we're talking 2 to 3%. There's not a lot of room for giving away, if you will. But also a high volume model. Very volatile food costs, as you can imagine. That is our primary raw ingredient. And in the recent years, pretty much of a downward pressure on labor costs in terms of reducing the number of people we use to produce our meals, and also a decrease in the skill level. So this is the world that we're operating in. if you think back to David's model of the value chain, this is kind of what our value chain looks like. But again, if you plug in his bar of NGOs, government, policymakers, academia, some of the consumer groups, those are all very influential and very important in influencing all of the stakeholders along this value chain. And it's important to look at it from the standpoint that everybody needs to be involved if we're going to get to the ultimate goal of nutritious and affordable food for all. There's huge interaction between all of these different players in the value chain. And I'd like to tell you a story because I think it illustrates really clearly why it's important that everyone plays a role from both a financial and a resource standpoint. In 1999, we were awarded the contract to do the food at the 2002 Olympic Games in Salt Lake City. And it was my first experience of operating food service from scratch in a developing country. And you say, well, Salt Lake City is in the U.S., it's a developed country. But when you think about what we had to build out from scratch, if any of you have ever been to Soldier Hollow in Utah, where the cross-country, the Nordic ski events and those sorts of things are held, and think about building food service in the middle of nowhere, where we had to start from scratch and build infrastructure. We had to bring in electricity, bring in refrigeration, bring in water supplies, meet the requirements, all of the health and safe food handling requirements in the U.S. We had USDA inspectors there 24/7, 24 hours a day. Our break-even point for a hot dog was $8. Now, we were highly criticized in the media, and we obviously had a population there who was willing to pay $8 for a hot dog. But if we had to go in and operate on our own in a developing country without help from government, help from vendors, help from all along this supply chain, the people there can't afford an $8 hot dog. So that's my point. Some of the potential levers, I think, that we have along this supply chain, David talked a little bit about the use of biotechnology, but if you look at the grower and the producer, I think there's a big role here maybe for some government, some policy with regard to agricultural policy, what kind of things we're incenting the growers and producers to produce. Some of the things that Hal said about how do you influence farmers in developing countries to produce crops that will be most beneficial for them financially. There also is some influence, you know, all of these things are interrelated. So if you look at the way that we as food service providers can go back, skip over a couple of layers and actually influence the grower and producer, we've done a couple of things. We've committed to supporting 2013 family farms by the year 2013. Huge emphasis on supporting local farmers, bringing them in through a consortium that we actually have set up. So not a farmer-run consortium, but a food service company-run consortium, where we're funneling them in to make sure that they're following safe practices, and then we can provide that food. Along a similar line, we've been able to influence the grower-producer directly through an alliance with a coffee company that we have chosen called Pura Vida, which happens to, it's actually set up as a foundation, so most of their profits go back to coffee-growing companies to help build infrastructure, to build schools, to educate kids, to build better processing facilities that are less energy intensive, those sorts of things. So I would make a case that the food service industry can help influence even the growers, producers by our choice of who we choose to do business with and how we can support them that way. From the packer processor standpoint, I think David brought up the point that one of their major roles is in shifting the nutrient composition, making their products more nutrient dense. And again, in terms of the way that the food service industry can help, we're a big enough company, we buy enough products, we can ask our vendors and suppliers to shift the composition of what they're providing to us. And we've done this on a number of occasions. Most recently, we did it with sodium in the soup that we buy. We asked our major vendor, supplier of soup, to reduce the sodium in all of the soup by 10 to 20% over a three-year period, with the idea we'll go back in another 3 years and ask them for another 10 to 20% reduction. And that comes from the fact that we buy a lot of soup. Also along that line, I think we have to consider things like fair labor practices. We recently had a situation where we discovered that there was actual slavery going on in the United States, something that you don't think about. You know, that was supposed to have gone away with the Civil War. That's something that you see in third world countries. And in fact, the tomato growers, a huge portion of the tomatoes in the United States come from Florida. There was a major issue in Florida with the tomato pickers who were literally living at on pennies a day, if you will. Very interesting. They were being paid, the tomato pickers there, in Immokalee, were being paid one and a half cents per pound of tomatoes that they picked, which meant they had to pick 4,124 pounds of tomatoes to make minimum wage. Think about it. That's a lot of tomatoes to pick and carry over the course of the day. But we were able to influence that. And it's not just Compass, it's a lot of the other restaurant businesses, some of the other big, huge fast food companies agree to pay a penny a pound more for tomatoes, provided that that penny a pound went directly to the pickers. Now, it was quite complicated. The coalition down there didn't like this idea. They held the money in escrow. It's finally been resolved. And while a penny a pound for us is something we can definitely afford, it's something some of the big fast food companies can definitely afford, what it's done, it sounds like so little, it's basically doubled the wages of these tomato pickers. So that's good for all of us. It gives them the ability to buy more nutritious and affordable food. It gives us the ability to do something good and to have good tomatoes. So that was kind of a win-win situation. From a distributor standpoint, and this is a piece of the value chain that often is ignored. They're often not at the table at meetings like this. They play an important role, though, because they're the link between, in many cases, between the top half of the value chain and the bottom half of the value chain. They're often the gatekeeper. They're responsible for keeping things in stock on shelves so that we can purchase them and bring them in and use them to produce meals. If they're not willing to bring in new and innovative and reformulated products, if they're not willing to bring in some of the products from these local farmers, we have a clog in the system, if you will. So they're an important piece, but I think a piece that's often ignored and maybe something we need to look at in the future to make this value chain run more smoothly. I talked a little bit about what food service folks can do from influencing vendors. We can also help some from a pricing strategy. Now, we can't give everybody free lunch. You know, we're in business. We have shareholders. But typically in the food service industry, our prices are 10% less than what someone would pay on the street. And that's really a win-win-win situation. We do it because it's intended to drive volume, which is an important part of our business model. The more people that we have in the door eating lunch, the better our profitability. it's good for our clients, which are often employers, if you think of a corporate dining location, because it increases productivity if people stay inside to have lunch rather than going out. And it's good for our customers because it saves them money. If they go out to the street, they're going to pay 10% more at least. So pricing is important there. I also think that our client plays an important role. And we really operate as guests in someone else's house, someone who's contracted with us, the school, the college, the university, the corporate entity. And they can play a role in pricing. They can play a role in education. They can play a role just in terms of their corporate culture, what they're about and what they're promoting for folks. We typically give our clients some investment money they can use for new equipment, to upgrade the dining room, things like that. And we have some very big corporate clients that have chosen to use those investment dollars towards subsidizing the healthier food as a way to get people to eat healthier food. So interesting model. It seems to work. We've seen some huge shifts in behavior when that's done. I think finances play a huge role. So in summary, I think that there are a lot of levers along the value chain from the food service perspective, a lot of different ways that industry can work with NGOs, with academia, with public policymakers, with government, to make this all work more effectively, to pull levers in small ways that will have big impact. Thank you.